You are listening to the Midcurrent Church Podcast. Today's message is week 3 of our sermon series, Enemies of the Heart. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
I'm curious if you have ever been asked a question about yourself, and your immediate answer to that question about you is no. But upon further review, you had to admit that just possibly, maybe, the answer was yes. This happened to me close to 15 years or so ago as a seminary student, actually, in Chicago. Part of my master's education and training to become a pastor involved in internships of sorts that placed me into high trauma settings, primarily hospital rooms and nursing homes, where I was asked to provide pastoral care to families and to patients who were experiencing sickness and emergency and in some cases, death. And a part of the internship was to provide us as students learning experiences in those very settings. The other part of the internship was intended to see what buttons got pushed inside of us when we entered into those kind of scenarios. And so as a part of the internship, we had to process each shift that we had with a licensed counselor who was a part of the seminary. We had to debrief what it is we experienced, how we felt, and you know, we had to debrief our interactions with you know, others in the room or other professionals who may have been involved. And so one day I was meeting with this counselor that we were supposed to meet with, and she and I were discussing an interaction that I had actually with my supervisor on that shift, and I was discussing the interaction and what things were like that day, going into, you know, detail about how this went and how that went. And my counselor, she stopped me in the middle of our discussion, and she asked me a question that ultimately turned into what would be one of the most valuable lessons that I have ever learned about myself. In the midst of me discussing the interactions I had that day, she stopped me and she said, "Hold on a second, Sten." She said, "I gotta ask you a question." She said, "Sten, are you an angry person?" And I was immediately able to answer, "No, I'm not." And I wasn't defensive about it. I just couldn't identify with the feeling, really, in the least bit. Nobody had ever said that about me. I couldn't tell what she could possibly be getting at. And so now I was confused, and I asked her, why would you ask that of me? And she said, "Well, most of the scenarios that you and I have been debriefing this semester, this one included," she said, "most of the scenarios that you and I discuss together, they usually result in you at some point along the way, demonstrating some pretty like intense emotions, you know, toward the situation or toward the people that you are, you know, involved with." And her hypothesis was that there must have been some kind of unresolved tension somewhere in my life, maybe even like from my childhood. She didn't know, but her hypothesis was there had to have been something unresolved inside of me from somewhere that was causing unrest in me at the moment. And so we spent the next, I remember this very clearly, we spent the next few hours, because it was just supposed to be an hour session. And I remember my wife kind of like wondering, like, "Where in the world have you been?" But with like time went by like that, and we spent the next 3 hours almost scouring my life, only to discover along the way that, oh my goodness, yes, she was absolutely right. There was some unresolved tension in my life years prior that had slowly, without me even knowing it, had slowly wrapped itself around my heart and resulted in somewhat of a just default level of intensity and anger inside of me that I had not detected on my own. And yet, in her eyes, and soon in my own eyes, it appeared to be rearing its head in some pretty unproductive and even some destructive ways. I'll begin with their question. Sten, are you an angry person? And I had to go, yeah, in some ways I think there is an anger inside of me somewhere. And so today, as we continue on this morning, I'm just wondering if it is at all possible, if it's at all possible that the same might be true of you, that your heart might be strangled in a sense by some kind of anger that you did not know existed. And if that is even remotely true, I want to help to try to free you from that feeling, to try to free your heart from the death grip that anger might have on it. And that's what I want to take time to do today as we move into the third week in our series, Enemies of the Heart. This whole series was designed to help us explore our hearts, more specifically the four emotions in our hearts that often go undetected and end up holding our hearts hostage. And the reason these emotions often go undetected is because in society today, I think we pay a lot less attention to what we can't see or measure, and we pay far more attention to what we can see and what we can measure. Consequently, we end up measuring and we end up monitoring behavior that we can see more so than we monitor the condition of our hearts, which we can't always see. And that can be dangerous, to just monitor behavior and to not pay attention to our heart. That can be dangerous because behavior is not a guaranteed predictor of what's going on in your heart, right? Too often, we hear of the elite athlete who died way too young, and then at the same time, we hear of like the chain smoker who lived well into their 90s, right? And I'm not saying that we don't, monitor behavior. I'm not saying you're not mindful of those kind of choices that we make. I'm just saying it's not always the best predictor of the health of our heart. And I think the same concept applies spiritually speaking. In fact, the wisdom from the book of Proverbs says it like this. It says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything that you do flows from it. Guard your heart, for everything flows from it. And what that means in this context that I'm setting up today, what that means is that I think it's possible that we can do all the right things. I think it's possible that we can go to church and we can read our Bible and we can be a good person and we can make sure we help old ladies across the street, and we can still have a heart that is under attack, and we can still have a heart that is this far from what God intended for us. And so my goal in this series is to encourage all of us to keep a vigilant watch over our hearts in hopes that we would begin to overcome some of the emotions that often overcome us. In total, we will have talked about four emotions. Each is fueled by the notion that somebody owes someone something. So in week one, we talked about jealousy, and we learned that ultimately jealousy says, God owes me. He gave it to them. He could have given it to me, but he didn't. So God owes me. Last week was a real feel-good story, I think, for everybody. We talked about greed. And greed is the emotion that says, I owe me. I earned it. I deserve it. I owe to me every good thing that comes my way. Today, as I already alluded to, we're going to be talking about anger. And anger says, you owe me. Okay? Jealousy says, God owes me. Greed says, I owe me, and anger ultimately says, you owe me, right? Most often when we get angry when we don't get what we want, and when we don't get what we want, we get hurt. I've heard it said before, show me an angry person and I'll show you a hurt person. And a hurt person usually feels like something was taken from them. Hurt person usually feels like, hey, you took my reputation. You took the best years of my life. You took my childhood from me. You took my innocence from me. You took my purity from me. You took an opportunity from me that should have been mine, an opportunity that I wanted. You took the wholeness of our family away from me or away from us. You took fill in the blank. And when you feel like something has been taken from you, there's a sense of loss. I worked with a pastor years ago who taught about some of these things. He taught all the time. I remember him saying that the most outward emotions that we experience, anger being one of them, most outward emotions like this are usually just evidence of a sense of loss that we are mourning on the inside. There's a gap between what we wanted and what we got, what ended up playing out. And the loss that you feel is usually the result of you feeling like something was taken from you. And so whoever took it from you has to give it back. They owe you. They are indebted to you. And typically we believe that the remedy for the loss we experience, the remedy for the anger that we feel inside, it's payback. Okay, most often that's how you settle a debt. Someone's got to pay it back. The irony about that approach, or in a lot of ways I could say the tragedy in that approach, is that the perceived debt can really never or rarely be paid back. That's the tragedy of this kind of, you know, debt-to-debtor relationship. The debt, the perceived debt, can rarely be paid back. Think about it. How do you pay back a 25-year-old whose mom or dad, you know, walked out on him when he was 12? How do you give that back? Right? How do you pay back a young child whose innocence was taken from them when they were young? How do you pay back an employee or a friend or someone? How do you pay someone back whose reputation was stolen from them with destructive lies? How do you give something back? You don't really. You can't. And so what happens is this: many people end up living their lives waiting for someone to pay back a debt that ultimately can't be paid, right? The opportunity to make things right is long gone, and yet the anger then still remains. And in most cases, it just intensifies, and it grows, and it spreads like wildfire, and all of a sudden you're stuck in a cycle or in a perpetual state of anger. Because something was taken from you and you feel like someone needs to give it back. And while anger, you know this if you've ever had this inside of you, there's a weird feel, like anger, while it feels good in a way, I'm not sure it's really doing any good. Feels good, yes, in the moment, but I'm not sure it's doing any good. And maybe most important for those of us gathered here today, I'm not sure it's what God desires of us. In fact, look at what James writes in the first chapter of the book that he wrote in the New Testament. Here's what he says. He says, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this." And so what I'd like to have you all to do today is take note of what he's about to say here, okay? He says, "Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become what? Angry." Why? Here's verse 20, "because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires." Be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Now, I know that we are all at different places in our relationship with Jesus. That's great. I'm glad you're here. Wherever you're at, we're all at different mile markers on the journey. But regardless of where you are at on the journey, regardless of where we are all at, if we're at all serious about following Jesus or just taking another step toward him in any way, then here's the hard truth that James is trying to help us understand. We cannot live a righteous life with an angry heart. We cannot live I know that's a big word, right? We cannot live a righteous, God-honoring, God-pleasing life with an angry heart. The two won't mix. They don't go together. Now, here's the deal. I'm not saying, I know this, we could be going, "Well, hey, what are you saying?" I'm not saying that you can't ever be angry. You might be tempted to think that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you can't ever be angry when something has been taken from you. When that's the case, it hurts. I get it. It hurts, right? And anger is often the natural response to what hurts, to what was taken, right? And so we got to understand here, the instruction for Jesus' followers, it's not, do not let yourself ever get angry, okay? It's always about how we respond to the anger that we feel. It's always about how we deal with the anger when it crops up in us. Ephesians 4:26, this is Paul writing to the church that he started. He writes this, in your anger, do not sin. Okay, not don't ever get angry. He says, in your anger, do not sin. Don't let the sun go down while you are still angry, for anger gives a foothold to the devil, right? So we cannot miss this. I'm gonna say it again. Anger in and of itself, right? To make that the focus of our discussion today, I wanna make sure you hear what I'm not saying. Anger in and of itself is not the sin. That the presence of this emotion in our heart or in our life, it's not necessarily the problem, but how you and I respond to it is what matters. The verse is time sensitive. It says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Don't leave the door to your heart open just even a little bit for the devil to sneak in and sit undetected in a giant Trojan horse of justifiable anger. So don't wait. Don't sit on your hands. Don't let it fester and don't let it simmer and grow and hang around. That's what becomes undesirable to God. If the sun goes down and you're still harboring anger in your heart, then your anger is no longer just a feeling that you're entitled to. It becomes a sin that entangles you. Why? Because you cannot live a righteous, God-honoring, God-pleasing, other-honoring life with an angry heart. And I think that's why anger, if we were actually just to look through the whole Bible, it's why it's written about so often by other authors who made up the books and the letters of the Bible. If we keep reading actually just in Ephesians chapter 4, this author, his name was Paul, he keeps talking about anger in a section where he's giving instructions to this church that he helped get off the ground. He's giving instructions to them and ultimately to us about how we're supposed to live as followers of Jesus. And he concludes this section of instruction to them by saying this. He says, get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. I like the ending there. He's like, in case I forgot everything, you know, if forgot any part of it, just every form of it, right? That'll cover it all. Any form of malice, get rid of it. Okay, now once again, we got to see the instruction is not do not let yourself get bitter or angry. Don't let it happen. The instruction, once again, is for how we deal with it when it exists. And yet I think too many people don't deal with it. They don't deal with anger properly. This is just all about it. We hold on to it. It becomes an excuse for a behavior that doesn't honor God. It becomes the justification for why we haven't gotten ourselves back on track or why we haven't made any progress in a new direction. We're going, how could I? I mean, didn't you hear what they did to me? Didn't you hear what they said about me? And all too often, we would rather just be the victim of our circumstances than do the hard work to overcome our circumstances. And so we end up spending all of our energy on continually telling a sad story rather than doing the hard work to take responsibility for our behavior. And we resent the suggestion that we don't have the right to feel that way. Right? I think far too often people who have let anger into their heart, they've already decided, right? For people who the sun's gone down and they're still angry, they've already decided that their offender won't be able to do anything to make it right. Right? I think angry people, they can't let their offender make it right. They can't let them off the hook. Otherwise, they would lose their excuse to stay stuck where they are. And they can't let that happen. And so anger tightens its grip a little bit more, and it infects just a little bit more of our hearts, little by little. And so this is why Paul says, when it's there, do the hard work to get rid of it. All of it, every form of it, it's poisoning you. It's poisoning you. So do everything you can to get it out of your life. Now, just in case anyone here is thinking that, you know, hey, you know, in case anyone's thinking about what Paul writes here, in case you're thinking like, well, that's, you know, that just sounds like another kind of pious religious figure who has no idea, you know, about what life is like in the real world. In case that's what you're thinking, I'd like to remind you or maybe inform you for the very first time that Paul actually penned these words not from like the comforts of a hammock out on the beach. He actually wrote these words from the inside of a prison cell after he was unjustly arrested, extradited to Rome, and where he sat for over a year awaiting a trial. Okay, so if hurt and anger result from what someone, you know, took from you, Paul had everything taken from him. He had every right to be angry and bitter and filled with rage, and yet this is still his response. Get rid of it, gang. Now, this in many ways may feel like an impossible task. After all, how do you get rid of an emotion? Right? How do you get rid of something that just kind of wells up inside of you? Paul appears to suggest that it begins with a decision to take a particular kind of action, right? So how do you get rid of an emotion? I think it begins with a decision to take a particular kind of action. And so in contrast to the anger and to the bitterness that we feel, Paul instructs us, to do something that I want us to see in the very next verse. Look at this. He says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other. Okay, Paul says that we should be compassionate towards those who have wronged us. And then separated by nothing more than just a comma, he says, forgiving others, right? The sentence structure implies that forgiveness is the means by which we get rid of the bitterness and the rage and the anger. It's to suggest that this is the antidote for our anger and that forgiveness is what enables us to be kind and compassionate to those who have neither been kind or compassionate to us, okay? If the sentence ended there, just that, hey, be kind and compassionate, forgiving each other. If the sentence ended just right there, we could probably argue about who was deserving of our forgiveness and who wasn't. We could maybe, you know, discuss where and when this is, you know, most appropriate and where there might be some exceptions to the rule. But Paul didn't end the sentence there. He didn't put a period there that said, be kind and compassionate, forgiving one another. He didn't end the sentence there. He says, be kind and compassionate, forgiving each other, just as in Christ, God forgave you. We are to extend a kind of forgiveness to others that mirrors the forgiveness that God extended toward us through Christ. We didn't deserve it, but God gave it to us anyway. And so the forgiveness that we offer to others, here's all it is. It is simply a gift from one undeserving soul to another. And in this regard, the kind of forgiveness that Paul is encouraging is probably not gonna make a whole lot of sense unless you understand in your head or maybe in your heart that you too are a forgiven person. Okay? God's attitude towards us helps us to understand that we don't forgive people because they deserve it, but we forgive people because we first have been forgiven. Forgiveness is a gift that we give in spite of the way that we feel. And so the question then becomes, how do we do it? How do we do it? How do we extend this kind of forgiveness in face of people that have taken some of the most, you know, important things from us. How do we do it? Now, maybe you're ready for the first time to put, you know, hurt and anger behind you. Maybe you're going, oh my goodness, I am seeing it, I'm sensing it. And maybe you're saying, yeah, I'm up for this. Or maybe you've tried many times before, you're willing to forgive, you want to forgive, and you feel like you have many times, but you still don't feel free, right? The feelings don't go away. If that's the case, actually in any case, if you're up for the challenge, I want to offer four steps today that actually come from a book that deals with some of the very issues that we're talking about today. I want to offer four steps that I think could help. Before I get there, let me add this first. If you're ready for this, you might just need to ask Jesus for help to do what feels impossible. Right? Before we get to some steps that we need to take, you might just need to start there and asking Jesus to help you do what you might feel like, I'm not sure I can do this on my own. And the other thing I would say is you might actually, in addition to, you might get help from a professional who could help you deal with these things. It could be very, very, very healing, okay? And aside from those, which could be in the mix for everything, aside from those things, then I wanna talk about four steps that I think could help you and I today begin to practically learn to forgive in a way that I think is gonna set our hearts free. And so here's the first step that I wanna share with you today. Identify who you're angry with. You gotta start there. Just like I did 15 years ago when I was confronted with my own intense emotions, I had to take time, and it took time. I had to take time to figure out, who am I angry with? And you might need to do the same, right? If nobody's like coming to mind, but you sense like, I don't know, there's something going on in here, you could ask, you ask yourself, if no one's coming to mind, ask yourself a few questions going like, who do I secretly wish would fail? Right? Or maybe you ask yourself, if you're having trouble, just determining who it is that you might be angry with, ask yourself, who do I have make-believe conversations with where I pretend to be giving them a piece of my mind? Don't pretend like you don't have those conversations. Ask yourself, who do I hope, or maybe just cross my fingers, that I would never see again? Okay? Whoever is on that list, it might be, I'm not saying it's a guarantee, it might be someone who has hurt you some time ago. One way or another, if there is an angry spirit inside of you, I think you owe it to yourself to find out who that person is. Here's the next step, which I actually happen to think could be the most significant of them all. Here's the next step. Determine what they owe you. I think this is the part that most of us miss, right? See, once you've identified the person you're angry with, typically typically all you know is what they did to you. But I think you've got to ask yourself, what did they take from you? Okay, not just what did they do, what did they take? Right? Until you're clear on that, I'm not sure you're really ready to forgive. You can go through the motions. You may be saying to yourself, like, I've already forgiven them so many times, right? Why don't I feel any better, right? I think until you know what you are actually forgiving, I don't think you can totally be set free. General forgiveness, I don't think helps heal specific hurts and specific wounds. So you have to identify what it is that you are hoping that they would pay back to you. What did they take? And what do you think they are supposed to pay back, right? The reality is you cannot cancel a debt that you have not clearly identified. So determine what it is that they owe you. Which brings me to step number three, right? Once you've identified what was taken, you've got to cancel the debt. Simply put, this is the decision that you make, that whoever hurts you does not owe you anything anymore. You've got to come to the reality that there's not really any way that they can even pay it back in the first place. So you're not going to demand that they owe you anything anymore. It could be a decision that you make in the quiet and in the depths of your own heart, or it could be something more tangible than that. I've heard of people who have made a list of all their offenders' offenses, and they put it in an envelope, and then they burn it in a fire, thus canceling the debt. I've heard of people that take the same list, put an envelope, and bury it in the backyard. In Charles Stanley's book, The Gift of Forgiveness, he tells the story of the day he decided to forgive his stepfather who hurt him significantly. And what he chose to do was to sit down in a room across from an empty chair that he pretended his stepfather was in. And in that room, he recounted all the ways that he had been hurt through the years, and he declared there in that moment that his stepfather was forgiven. And when this conversation was over, Charles Stanley got up, walked away, left the room, and left the anger and the resentment there behind him. And he said anytime his feelings were stirred up again, he reminded himself of that day and that moment when those accounts were settled. Okay, that might feel drastic. You're going like, I ain't sitting in a room across from an empty chair and talking out loud. That's fine, but all I'm saying is, however you gotta work it out, you gotta figure out how you cancel the debt if you are gonna be free from it, because here's what's true, right? You are the only person that is gonna pay. You are the only person that is gonna pay for demanding that someone pay you back a debt that cannot be paid. You will be the only one that pays. So you got to cancel the debt. Here's the last step. Dismiss the case. Identify who you're angry with. Determine what it is that they owe you. Cancel the debt and dismiss the case. Okay? The reality is, just because you've forgiven a debt, it doesn't mean that your feelings are just automatically going to disappear. Poof, gone, never experience them again, right? We can do the hard work to forgive and we can mean it, but the reality is memories can still dig up old hurtful emotions. And when memories arise of hurtful times, usually one of two things happen. We get riled up again. We'd start defending ourselves to ourselves. We start having those imaginary conversations and we reopen the case. Or, this is typically the other thing we do, or we just push that feeling away. We try to just turn our attention elsewhere and pretend that this, you know, doesn't exist and never existed in the first place. And I would actually say neither response is all that appropriate, okay? Living, maybe is a strong word, but remembering the moment, I think it's okay. Allow yourself to feel the emotions that your memory stirs up. But instead of reopening the case and relitigating the facts, take it as an opportunity to remind yourself that he or she doesn't owe you anything. We tried the case and I canceled the debt. And I dismissed the case once and for all. Now, friends, here's the deal. I got a hunch that some of this is sitting at pretty heavy. That's what I was saying before. In addition to this, you might seek help from Jesus. You might get help from a professional. Either way, I got a hunch that some of this stuff could sit pretty heavy, and I only walk you through it. Maybe it doesn't apply to you and you're feeling okay, but if it's like, wow, this is heavy, I only walk you through it. I only bring you back through the fire because I'm just not sure that we can live the life that God desires for us. I'm not sure that we can live the life that we desire for ourselves with a heart that is full of anger. The reality is, gang, our hurt in many cases is real. Our emotions are normal and natural and to be expected, but pain is not a trophy to show off. It's not a story to continue to tell. It's a poison to our soul. So let's refuse to drink another drop. And instead, let's strive to be people who, as often as we can, simply offer the gift of forgiveness from one undeserving soul to another. Let me pray for us. God, this stuff is and can be heavy for some of us that are sitting here right now. And so, God, all I'm asking is that you would come alongside of us in the midst of whatever we might be feeling, God. We only We only talk about this, God, and we only dig into these emotions in our hearts so that we could be free from some emotions, God, that we believe are holding us back, holding our hearts hostage from what you desire for us, from the life that you intended for us. So God, we don't dig it up to just, you know, have it be dumped on our lap. We dig it up, God. We search our own hearts so that we might be free from the things that have had a death grip on them for far too long. God, we want to live a life that honors you. We want to live a life that honors other. We want to be free from the things that are trying to pull us back and pull us down. And God, if it's anger, if it's hurt inside of us, would you help us to forgive whoever caused the hurt, God? Would you help us to cancel the debt? God, we need your help to do what otherwise we realistically are going to have a hard time doing on our own. And so we're asking you to help. God, we're asking you to come alongside of us if and when we do the hard work to figure out where we need to cancel the debts and dismiss the cases that we've held on for far too long. God, we thank you so much for your son, Jesus. It's through his life that you offered us freedom. And we give you thanks for it here today.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Midcurrent Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m.